Today's March 16th, 2015. This is Joint Committee on Ways and Means, Subcommittee on Natural Resources. Today is a public hearing on House Bill 5010, the Columbia River Gorge Commission. Before we open a public hearing, I'll go ahead and turn it over to the Honorable Mr. Ken Rockhall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Gomberg. House Bill 5010 is the budget bill for the Columbia River Gorge Commission. Materials for today's meeting have been posted to OLIS. Just wanted to go over a couple brief points about the Gorge Commission before the agency makes its presentation. The commission has a couple of rather unique budgetary and structural features. It's a bi-state regional planning agency that is authorized by a federal act and created through an interstate compact between Oregon and Washington. All of the staff of the agency are considered to be employees of the state of Washington, but Oregon pays roughly half of their costs through a professional services contract with the state of Washington. Budgetarily, the unique aspect of this agency's budget is that the compact requires that the two states share equally in the operational costs of the commission. And this is a slight complicating factor for budget development because the two states do things differently at different times. So there needs to be some ultimate coordination between the legislatures, the two state legislatures, before the final adopted budget is passed by both states. And unfortunately, what it generally means is the state with the lowest budget is the one that sets the budget, so which is in the past has been somewhat of a complicating factor. If you notice on the LFO presentation materials, the commission's current service level budget's about $920,000 general fund, and this is just Oregon's share. Anytime you see a number for the Gorge Commission that's in the Oregon budget, it's roughly doubled because of that shared component. Oregon's current service level increase of about 3.2%, however, is understated because this is just the way we do current service level in Oregon. We increase professional services at the standard inflation rate. And as you know, personal service costs go up at a much higher rate than just general inflation. So the state of Washington computes what they call a maintenance level budget, which is just like Oregon CSL, and that's estimated to be about $932,000, primarily due to approved salary and benefit increases for Washington employees. The agency request budget had three policy packages in it. One was to add staff at a cost of about $768,000, and I'm sure the agency will go into more detail about that. This would add four positions and restore funding for an administrative operations manager. There was a second package for $5,000 general fund to provide training resources for current and new commissioners. And then a third package was $25,000 general fund for attorney general resources because, again, as the compact requires the two states to work together on legal issues. The Oregon governor's budget included the first package that added planning and other staff resources and increased the budget to about $1.7 million general fund, and that's about a 90% increase over the current biennium. Washington governor's budget, however, included no packages and funded the commission at basically the maintenance level. So there's going to have to be some resolution to that. And the way that happens is LFO staff then works with the staff of the Washington legislature as their process proceeds. And they have they do not have a joint process like Oregon. They have a Senate Ways and Means Committee and a House Appropriations Committee. So those two committees have to get together, and then we have to get together with them. So it's an ongoing process. So with that, I think Mr. Nichols from the commission is here to talk about The Gorge Commission's budget.
Good morning, Mr. Co-Chair and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to visit with you this morning. I'm Darren Nichols. I'm the executive director of the Columbia River Gorge Commission. On my left, your right, is our chair, the commission chair, Keith Chamberlain. And on my right, your left, is our budget analyst, Travis Miller. I also want to take just a minute with your permission to introduce a couple of folks behind me. The first row there is our incoming interim executive director, Christina Wolinkowski. This is Christina's first day on the job, so she'd be happy to come up and sit with us, but take it easy on her, if you will. Next to Christina is Terry Cullen, our principal planner, and then next to Terry is Jeff Litwack, our commission counsel. I think it's important to note that that is the size of our entire agency staff. We've got a couple of folks who are out sick today, couldn't join us, but you're looking at the entire agency that is the Columbia River Gorge Commission. Before I get started with the presentation, just want to orient you to the materials that you have in front of you. You should have two packets, one of which looks like this. It's got the commission's letterhead on it. It's a more detailed version of the presentation that we're going to walk through. It also includes some letters of support and some charts that will also be included in the presentation. Just want you to know what's in front of you. We will walk through this fairly quickly, but if you have questions about the materials or need to refer to something later, it's there for you. You should also have a paper copy of the PowerPoint presentation itself. So you can follow along and be happy to move back and forth through the slides as needed. And then you should have a map of the National Scenic Area, kind of an 11 by 17, a larger piece of paper that shows the area of Oregon and Washington that we are responsible for. So Ken did a good job of describing a little bit about what the Gorge Commission is, and I think it helps to orient you just a little bit about the Gorge Commission, the National Scenic Area. So I'm going to spend a few minutes just going through that. We'll do that fairly quickly, and then we'll get into the budget presentation. If this is not news to you, or you feel like you've already got the National Scenic Area in hand, please just let me know, and we'll skip that part. It has been helpful in the past because we're not a state agency. In the way that you're used to dealing with state agencies, and Ken alluded to that in his opening comments. The Columbia River Gorge National Scenic Area is a unique agreement between the state of Oregon, the state of Washington, and the United States Congress. So there's some state elements, there's some interstate elements, and there's a federal element. In essence, in order to establish the National Scenic Area requires an interstate compact, which is a creature of the United States Constitution. It also requires the consent of Congress through a federal act, and then the implementation of that federal act and that interstate agreement through the state's respective statutes. Here's the area that we're talking about. The National Scenic Area is essentially a protected natural, scenic, cultural, and recreation area with some urban communities, I'll say rural communities, that are designated as, quote, urban areas. There are 13 of those nestled within the National Scenic Area. The National Scenic Area essentially extends from the edge of the Portland metropolitan area, Troutdale, at the mouth of the Sandy River, 85 miles up the Columbia River. This map might show it a little bit better. It kind of shows you where we're talking about. Essentially includes the eastern portion of Multnomah County in Oregon, and then portions of Hood River County and Wasco County, extending, as I said, 85 miles upriver to the mouth of the Deschutes River on the Oregon side, or almost but not including the Maryhill Museum on the Washington side. So that'll give you a sense of the area that we're talking about. This shows the counties. It's important to note that the National Scenic Area includes portions of two states, six counties, the 13 urban areas that I mentioned, some of which are incorporated, some of which are not. It's also important to note that we work closely with four Columbia River Treaty tribes. So that's the Warm Springs, the Umatilla, the Nez Perce, and the Yakima. Those tribes have ceded lands in this territory and then also have rights to the resources here as well. That's an important component that we don't always talk about, but it's certainly an important component of the National Scenic Area. So what is the Gorge Commission? The Gorge Commission is this unique 13-member commission that represents two states and the United States Forest Service. Six members are appointed from Oregon. Six members are appointed from Washington. Six of those members are appointed by counties. The other six are appointed by the two states' governors, and then the 13th member is appointed by the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture. That role has historically been filled by an ex officio member of the United States Forest Service. So this is a little more complicated than the boards and commissions that you're used to dealing with, just because we've got members from two states, but also because there's this federal and an interstate compact component to that. So what I want to talk about today in our presentation is a little bit about the agency's mission, its goals, the budget drivers, some of the environmental factors that we're facing, and then that will lead into the budget issues and needs. And hopefully that gives you some context for the budget that you have in front of you and what we're trying to accomplish in administering this unique National Scenic Area. If you have questions as we move along, please just interrupt me, as I'm sure you will, but I just want to make sure you know that's completely fine. The Gorge Commission is essentially the regional planning agency for all of the non-federal lands in the National Scenic Area. The National Scenic Area includes some just under 300,000 acres. A little over half of that are state and local and privately owned lands. We are the planning agency for those lands in the National Scenic Area. And I've circled, this header kind of shows the components that it takes to actually have a National Scenic Area, a bi-state National Scenic Area. It starts with an agreement between the states that requires an act of Congress to provide consent for the states to enter into that agreement. And then those states, in this case, Oregon and Washington, then can formally enter into a compact, which is, as I mentioned earlier, it's a creature of the U.S. Constitution. But where we are today is planning for the future of the place. So we've got the legal components in place. What we don't have, really, is a modern plan for the future of the Gorge. And so I'm going to pause there for a minute and just say that again. We don't have a modern plan for the future of the Columbia River Gorge National Scenic Area, and that's why we're asking for your help. All right, so starting with the agency mission, here it is. I'm not going to ask you to read this. Essentially, the agency's mission comes from the National Scenic Area Act, and it has two components, two fundamental components. The first is to protect and enhance the scenic, natural, recreation, and cultural resources of the Columbia River Gorge. The second is to support the economy of the area by encouraging growth to occur in existing urban areas and allowing economic development consistent with resource protection. Again, this language flows right out of the 1986 National Scenic Area Act. So I mentioned a minute ago that the Columbia River Gorge Commission is essentially the regional planning agency for this bi-state region. We work closely with the United States Forest Service. The Forest Service develops policies that it submits to the Gorge Commission for the federal lands in what we call the special management area. Those are the areas of the National Scenic Area that are the most sensitive, typically, and those are the areas that are the least open for development. Those are handled by the U.S. Forest Service, but we work closely with the Forest Service in developing those policies. The rest of it falls to this Columbia River Gorge Commission agency, this agency with five staff members who are expected to plan for, host, monitor, analyze, and help the regional community develop a vision for its future. We're not a federal agency. We don't receive federal funds. We're also not a state agency, but we do receive, by the terms of the agreement between the states, we receive funding from both states' general funds, and those funds have to be equal. Ken mentioned that a minute ago. We're also not a local government. I suppose if I was going to round this out, I should let you know that we're not a local government. Although we have responsibilities that sometimes feel a little bit like a local government, like a local planning commission, we also have responsibilities that feel sometimes a little bit like a state agency, not the least of which is coming and visiting with you this morning. We also have some responsibilities that feel a lot like a federal agency. And in fact, when the Gorge Commission makes rules or adopts rules, those rules have the force and effect of federal law. That's different from the state agencies that you typically oversee. So in essence, the agency's mission is a regional planning mission. And you see there the cover of our management plan, just as proof that we do, in fact, have a management plan for the Columbia River Gorge National Scenic Area. You'll see at the bottom the date is April 2004. Prior to that, the original management plan was 1992. About 80% of the 1992 plan is still in place. We're still working with tools that are 23 years old, and if you've been paying attention to the Northwest or the National Scenic Area or the Gorge, you know that a lot has changed since 1992, but our plan hasn't changed to reflect those changes in the landscape and some of those pressures and drivers that we're going to talk about in a minute. So what are the Commission's goals? Here, this is a long list, just quickly walking down through these. The agency's goals are, first of all, to increase investment in the National Scenic Area, in planning for the future of the National Scenic Area. I'll talk in a few minutes about why that's really important, some of the things that, some of the critical factors that are facing us in doing our job, but why an increased investment, in fact, a significantly increased investment is needed. The agency is also responsible to and takes its job seriously in monitoring the gorge, both the economic health of the gorge, but importantly, the health of the resources that we're responsible for. So one of our goals is to be able to monitor the health of the gorge. We're also responsible to do some direct permitting for Klickitat County, Washington, for that portion of the National Scenic Area. Under the terms of the Act and the Compact, counties are have the option to implement their own ordinance. Five of the six counties have exercised that option. One of the six counties has not exercised that option. So in Klickitat County, which has not chosen to directly implement a scenic area ordinance, the development applications in that portion of Klickitat County fall to the Commission under the terms of the Act and the Compact. So we do some direct permitting with applicants who want to build a fence or a deck or a house or change the ag use on their property. We serve a kind of a local government function for those lands in Klickitat County. Right now we have a permit backlog, and one of the Commission's goals is to reduce that permit backlog. I'd say the goal is really to eliminate it, but five staff, that's a challenge. Commission's also interested in resolving long-standing boundary disputes. We can get into that, but it would probably take most of the day. Suffice it to say that the maps we got from Congress weren't really clear about where the boundaries of the National Scenic Area are or where the boundaries of the urban areas are, and that has led to some long-standing litigation and some tension and some, unfortunately, I think, strained relationships in the region. The Commission is committed to clarifying the location of those boundaries and helping to provide some certainty to both the protection interests and the development interests to know where they can and can't occur. The Commission is also committed to collaborative governance. This is something that we embarked on in early 2012. The Commission remains committed to working closely with its local government, tribal, and community partners to help envision and prepare for the successful future of the National Scenic Area. We're committed to building relations with Columbia River Treaty tribes. That's an effort that is important to us, and we've invested a lot in over the last now 7 or 8 years. Every year we meet with them in government consultation. That remains a high priority for the Commission. We're also committed to keeping skilled expertise on staff. As you can imagine, implementing a national scenic area is not, it's kind of a one-of-a-kind expertise. Part of what the commission is trying to do, and I would say a fairly high priority, is hanging on to its existing staff expertise so that we can continue to have and host a national scenic area into the future. And then just improving commission functions. I think that probably goes without saying, but the commission is committed to improving its functions. All right, so what are some of the budget drivers? I mentioned long-range regional planning. The commission is, under the terms of the act, it's mandated to update the management plan for the National Scenic Area no less than every 5 years, but no more than every 10 years. So if you want to do the math, we've been at this now for 28 years, and we have done one partial update of the management plan in 2001. That effort was completed and adopted by the commission in 2004, and then we endured a decade of litigation over some of the components of that partial update. So now here we are in 2015, more than 10 years beyond the last adoption of the plan, and we're hoping that you'll invest again in our ability to look forward into the future and help this place function for a sustainable future. I note here rapidly growing regional recreation demands. The regional recreation economy, as you'll see in a minute, is around $500 million a year. That's $500 million annually in the region. We know that we have somewhere between 5 and 10 million visitors. I think it's telling that I can't tell you more precisely how many visitors come to the National Scenic Area, because we haven't had the resources to really get our hands around what the recreation needs are. All we know is that the Multnomah Falls parking lot and almost every other trailhead is already full in the first weekend in March, and it will get worse through the summer recreation season. We're not prepared to host the number of visitors that are coming the way we should in the Northwest as a national scenic area. But your state's agencies have interests. The Oregon Department of Transportation is currently restoring the historic Columbia River Highway State Trail. Your Oregon Parks and Recreation Department is working on the final drafts of a management plan, an updated management plan for its parks in the Columbia Gorge. Washington's agencies have similar aspirations. Federal agencies have their own aspirations for different trails and facilities. And increasingly, private organizations and private landholders have land speculation and development aspirations for recreation development as well. All of those pressures lead to really, I think, a compelling need to update our plan for the Gorge so that we're not over-exploiting the resources that we have, and so that we're managing effectively our ability to host visitors from around the world every year in a way that's safe, that is a high-quality experience, and is, again, not over-exploiting the resources that we care about and the resources that, in fact, draw them. Increasingly, that requires a lot of staff time for regional convening and coordination. We've got agencies in both states who are trying to anticipate what's happening in the other state in order to make sound investments in infrastructure. So just as an example, the ports of Hood River and Cascade Locks have recently started a conversation about their management of the two of the three bridges that connect the two states. The third bridge is the Dalles Bridge. It's an ODOT-owned facility just downriver from the Dalles Dam. But the Bridge of the Gods at Cascade Locks and the Hood River Bridge are port-owned facilities that are 1920s-era bridges. They're obsolete by anybody's estimation. The lanes are too narrow. They're not seismically sound facilities. And they have a lot of deferred maintenance. The question is, who's responsible for those facilities? Well, in order to have that kind of conversation in any kind of meaningful fashion requires some kind of bi-state coordination. Those facilities clearly have an impact on the economy, the recreation, the resource management of the National Scenic Area. But in order to to have any kind of meaningful conversation about the future of those two facilities requires a tremendous amount of bi-state coordination. That's a role that the commission should be able to fill. Again, with five staff members, that becomes a challenge. I've already talked about the growing backlog of development applications. Suffice it to say that in 2012, we were seeing about 10 to 12 applications a year. We are now, we've more than doubled that. In fact, we have about a 300% increase over the last couple of years. And we expect as the economy continues to come out of the recession that we will see additional demands for development in the Klickitat County portion of the National Scenic Area, the part that we're responsible for. The backlog of permits has grown also from around 12 to, I believe, at last count we had 37 applications in the queue. These are landowners and development interests who are trying to do something with their property, maybe building a winery or a vineyard, could be just adding a deck to a house, or building a fence, but we have 37 people in line. At the rate that we're able to process that equates to about a year and a half wait for a permit. I think for most people, that's too long, and we're hearing that repeatedly. Unfortunately, those wait times may increase if we don't get some additional staff dedicated to helping with that work. So those are some of the budget drivers. Now I want to spend just a minute talking about environmental factors. I've touched on some of these already, but I think it's important for the committee to just pause for a minute and look at where we've been over the last few years. Through the recession, the Columbia River Gorge Commission Agency complied with the budget reductions that all Oregon agencies had to take, and those equated to about, I think, 17 or 19%. Over a series of budget reductions. Those reductions were, of course, matched by Washington in the spirit of keeping the budgets equal. What we also had to do is take budget reductions from Washington that were then matched by Oregon in our Oregon budget. And so in total, we lost about 30% of our budget, more than any other state agency. For an agency this small, at that point, we had a staff of about 10. That was pretty devastating. And unfortunately, in order to make those budget reductions, meant that we had to reduce our staff by about half. We lost 50% of our staff between 2008 and 2012. So just leave that there for the moment. I also mentioned that development applications are up about 300%. Since 2012, so while our staff's been cut in half, our current planning, our permitting workload has tripled. That's probably enough right there. But there are some other things that I think are important to note. Coal and oil transport is an emerging issue that, please.
Senator Hansel has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
When you say your building permits and stuff are up, is that on both sides of the river or just the Oregon side? Are you jurisdictionally responsible for Washington as well?
Permits are up on both sides of the river, absolutely. Coming out of the recession, counties are seeing an increase in permits. Five of the six gorge counties review those through their own direct implementation. Klickitat County, the one county that has not adopted an ordinance to directly implement the National Scenic Area Act, those responsibilities fall to the commission. So we directly implement permit applications, the review and approval of permits for the Klickitat County portion of the National Scenic Area. Having said that, we also provide a high level of technical assistance and some coordination with the other counties, especially on more complicated development reviews or on reviews that either span the state line or projects that occur in multiple counties. So the commission does have a role in all six counties, absolutely, but we have a more direct kind of hands-on role interacting with applicants in Klickitat County, Washington. So when I talk about the numbers of permits, I'm speaking directly to the numbers of permit applications that have come to our agency as a result of our responsibilities in Klickitat County.
Okay, so follow-up?
Yeah.
When you're talking about the applications that the commission's directly responsible for, it's Klickitat County, and then you do the review after the counties have done it in the other states?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Hansel, thank you. Yes, that's a fair characterization. Our ability to review the permits that are approved by other counties in both states is severely diminished as a result of the staff reductions, but we still have that responsibility.
Got it. Thanks.
Please proceed.
Okay, thank you. So coal and oil transport, as I'm sure you're aware, is an issue that is putting 19 oil trains a week through the heart of the Columbia Gorge. That's raised a lot of concerns on both sides of the river. Those trains are primarily traveling on the Washington side, although they do travel through Oregon. We're also seeing a number of coal trains that travel through the gorge. Those are only traveling on the Washington side, but because of the proximity of the two states and because of the impact of the river and resources, those are shared concerns on both sides of the Columbia River. That's just one of many sort of emerging concerns that the commission continues to face, and we hear a lot about. I mentioned here drought connected to forest health, which is connected to an invasion of a couple of beetles, one being the five-spined California Ips beetle, which is a bit of a mouthful, but also the pine bark beetle, which is a little easier to pronounce. But those two beetles have tag-teamed our ponderosa pine population in the gorge and have essentially decimated the pines in the gorge. Those are that's obviously a concern for a number of reasons. It creates an immediate visual scenic impact, but it also leads to some economic costs, and I think maybe most importantly, it increases the risk of wildfire. When you've got standing dead ponderosa pines, that becomes a concern during the summer. I mentioned collaborative governance. This is an issue that the commission has wrestled with and really, I think, struggled with for a couple of decades, but has taken a conscious effort to try to pull the region together. That takes effort. We've had, I think, quite a bit of success over the last 3 years at getting the region to work together and to work together with the commission, but that takes effort. And then I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about some assessment reports that the commission had done in 2014 that I think really tell the story maybe even better than I can in words. This is just a sampling, a snapshot, if you will, of the environmental factors that we're facing. I think it's safe to say that the Columbia River Gorge is a dynamic place. It's got dynamic people and interests and dynamic communities. There's a lot changing that we are not able to keep up with, and that's a concern for a regional planning agency with responsibilities to host a national asset. I might just pause there for a minute to see if there's any questions or.
Yes, I have one question. For your permitting process in Klickitat County, it's quite normal at the local level and city and county in Oregon to be charging permitting fees that pays for part of the cost of either pays for part of the cost or pays the entire cost of the permitting process. It appears you have very little other funds receipts, which would tell me you do not have any permitting fees. Is that correct?
Mr. Co-Chair, that's correct.
Is there any provision in law that prevents you from having those permitting fees?
Well, that's an interesting question, and I'll answer it as any lawyer would. It depends. It depends on who you ask. Our counsel has consistently advised us that we could charge fees for those permits. The state's attorney generals are not in agreement, so that creates an interesting dynamic for the commission. We could arguably begin charging fees and collecting fees for permit applications, but that would come with some possible disagreement. I would also say this, that as the agency's manager and kind of from just on a purely practical standpoint, what it would cost for us to set up a fee receiving service would essentially take whatever fees we could reasonably charge. I think under the best of scenarios, it wouldn't be efficient for us to start collecting fees when we're talking about 10 or 12 or even 30 permits per year. I don't want to say no, but
My sense is that it wouldn't be prudent for us.
In terms of if out of the Washington and Oregon counties, at least as your explanation is that all the counties except for one are doing the local permitting process under the requirements that have been set out, which means they're probably charging those applicants fees, would be my guess. So in one particular county that's where you're doing the local approval, there's no fees being charged. And you've indicated that because of the limited resources that you have and the number approvals or reviews that you have to do at the local level, that it's limiting your ability to review the permits that have been approved in the other counties. So I'm just wondering about the rationale of that, in the sense that you're not charging fees for the one county that isn't doing it on its own, and that's impacting your ability to review the permits in all of the other counties. So
I think that's probably a fair presumption. Having said that, the number of permits that come into us on an annual basis would make it challenging for us to hire a full-time staff dedicated to the effort based on that variability. I would also say this, the nature of a two-state agency who has conversations with you like this on Monday morning and then has conversations with their colleagues in Washington on Tuesday morning, those colleagues, your colleagues in Washington, have at times in the past directed the agency or suggested that the agency should begin collecting fees as a way of sort of weaning us off of the two-state general fund budgets. In other words, why don't you just collect fees, Mr. Nichols, and then we'll just do away with your general fund budget in Washington. I think we haven't been willing to roll that dice because we've never had sort of a deep staff pool or other funding options. We'd like to explore those. We would love to explore those, but the nature of the two-state political dynamics is one that we have to tread very carefully.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Please proceed.
Thank you. Okay, so let's move on to the assessment reports that I talked about in 2014. This is probably some work that should have been done in 1986 before the commission was created. However, I would say that after 28 years of experience, we've learned a lot of lessons, and I think in many ways the commission and the region is better prepared to make some sense of these reports in ways that we may not have been ready for in 1986 or 87. Having said that, this is a first ever set of administrative assessments conducted by the Hatfield School of Government, Phil Kiesling and his team at Portland State University, and by their colleagues at the Evans School of Public Affairs at the University of Washington. So Sandy Archibald and her team up there did a very good job for us as a first effort, but they got down to the weeds and took a hard look at this agency for a couple of just fundamental questions. Number one is, what is this agency supposed to be doing? Number two, what are the best practices around that kind of work responsibility? And number three, what resources would it take to effectively do that work? I've offered some of the very high-level findings here. I've got a copy of the report, and I have a copy of all four of the reports, actually. All four of them are available on our agency website if you'd like to take a look at this. Some really detailed assessment from the two schools, taking a hard look at this public agency. Among the findings is that the commission's mission is uniquely complex. There's nothing like it in the world, literally. There are a couple of kind of distant comparisons in the United States. The Tahoe region between California and Nevada is one of those things that's a little bit similar, but really in many ways fundamentally different. The Chesapeake Bay Commission on the East Coast has some similar responsibilities, but it's structured and operates in a completely different fashion. There are many other interstate compacts. I think there's a 220 or 230 of them nationally, but each one is uniquely tailored to meet a specific objective, and so is the Columbia River Gorge National Scenic Area. So as a result, we have this complex set of laws, but that are unique to us, and it's It's difficult to look anywhere else for an example. I think another telling finding coming out of the reports is that this agency has never had the resources that it needs to do the job it's asked to do, not from the beginning and not at any point along the 28-year history. In fact, we've been, in my estimation, severely underfunded through that period. Our current staffing is 5.25 FTE. I had everybody raise their hands a minute ago. I won't do it again. The entire agency is 5.25 people. The minimum staffing needed to accomplish the mandatory federal and interstate responsibilities of the Gorge Commission, according to the assessment reports, is 25.5 FTE. I'm not asking you for all of those today. I'm just offering that to say we're way behind where we need to be to keep up with our federal mandatory responsibilities to this region, to its people, and to the resources that we're responsible to protect. The reports also highlighted a number of bi-state cooperation challenges. So I mentioned some of the agencies on both sides of the river, state agencies that have aspirations in the National Scenic Area. A lot of really great ideas. But state agencies can't operate like state agencies typically operate in the Columbia Gorge National Scenic Area because they each have a responsibility to one another across the state line. That requires a higher level of coordination, and right now this agency, the Columbia River Gorge Commission, which should be responsible for coordinating those two states' investments and those two states' planning for the future, that function really isn't in place. So it ends up being business as usual for the state's departments of transportation, for the state's parks and recreation departments, for the state's environmental and fish and wildlife departments. That's not enough to secure and host and coordinate a national scenic area that exists on both sides of a state line. There's also some administrative redundancy that came up in the reports. Each state kind of wants to manage us like a state agency. I understand that. And we want to be accountable. The end result is that we end up being accountable to ourselves first and then to both states independently. Separate auditing and separate review requirements, separate performance measurements. That's really redundant. It's unnecessarily redundant. I think there's an opportunity there for the states to work together on a system that is appropriate, that holds the agency accountable, but doesn't hold the agency sort of three times accountable when we've only got five people to put together some kind of basic program. All right, so this budget that you have in front of you really starts to deal with this insufficient agency resources. I mentioned that some of the findings coming out of the assessment reports are that the agency's never had the resources it needed to do its job. That matters if you're a landowner who's trying to apply 1987 data and 1987 policies in a 2015 world. It matters if you're a state agency who's trying to keep up with 2015 recreation demand on your historic Columbia River Highway State Trail, and the rest of your colleagues are still trying to implement a management plan that is now 23 years old and counting. It matters if your communities who are trying to make smart infrastructure decisions based on technology and findings and assessments that were completed in 1988 or 1989, and the entire recreational landscape has changed since then, but your plan still reflects those 1989 thinking. This agency needs sufficient resources. So what does that look like? Well, the assessment estimates that to host a national scenic area like the Gorge with mandatory responsibilities takes an annual investment of about $3.6 million a year. Right now we're at $900,000, so we're not even in the ballpark. We're falling, we've got about 25% of the dollars, and we've got about 20% of the staff that we need to host a national scenic area with 5 to 10 million annual visitors, a regional population of 80,000, and the growing interest that we're seeing in the Gorge. I offer this chart to highlight that. This shows basically the agency's funding over time. The blue bars are actual dollars. The orange bars are adjusted to 1989 dollars. This is the agency's annual budget. That red line is basically the agency's original budget
adjusted for inflation over time. So you can see that both in terms of nominal dollars, but certainly in terms of actual resources available to the agency, we've just continued to fall further and further behind. That was happening long before the recession, and it certainly was exacerbated, I think, by the recessionary cuts, but it's been a chronic problem for a long time. That's if we had had sufficient resources when we started, but what we know now is we probably didn't have sufficient resources even then. Here's another chart that shows, I think, highlights kind of just to put, helps me to put it in perspective. What are we talking about? This is Oregon's natural resource agencies. Some of our colleagues, and if you can see it, you got to kind of put your magnifying glasses on. But you can see the Columbia River Gorge Commission's down there. It's got the smallest agency budget of all the Oregon natural resource agencies. That red line at the bottom of the screen is what it would take to sufficiently host and prepare for the future of the National Scenic Area. We're not talking about.
Senator Hatzell has a question.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Mr.
Do the feds have any skin in the game in this? I mean, because we get to host it, we're supposed to fund it.
I heard a question and a statement. I'll answer them both. I'll respond to them both. So you ask, first of all, do the feds have any skin in the game? Yes, the feds have some skin in the game in that the United States Forest Service maintains an office dedicated to the National Scenic Area, and that agency focuses on planning and management of the federal lands in what we call the special management area. It's about, if I remember right, it's about 46% of the lands in the National Scenic Area. The Forest Service hosts and maintains things like the Multnomah Falls Lodge and other trailheads and facilities. So yes, the federal government makes a significant investment in the National Scenic Area. The federal government does not make a significant investment in this commission. In fact, it essentially does not make an investment in this commission. We do some minimal fee-for-service work for the United States Forest Service, but essentially we don't receive federal funding for the Gorge Commission's activities. Now, your second statement, can you repeat your second statement, please?
I think you answered it. Yeah.
Okay, I think I got them both there. Your second statement was this has been foisted upon us by the feds. I think that's partly true, but it really starts with, and if you remember the early slides I had, started with an agreement between the states. While it does require the consent of Congress, and the National Scenic Area Act provides that consent, this really started as an Oregon and Washington agreement, and I think that's important to remember that the Columbia River Gorge responsibilities and commitment first and foremost was an agreement between the states that Congress agreed to provide its consent to, but this wasn't really placed upon us by the federal government. It was something that our states committed to, and I think is a noble commitment and one that we should uphold. All right, so on this same chart, you'll see, just for comparison, those two red lines at the top highlight the annual regional recreation and tourism economy I mentioned before. It's about $500 million a year. We've got a lot of people coming and spending money in the gorge. Just below that, you've got the annual revenues to the unmanned aerial vehicle industry. You probably know that we have a Boeing subsidiary operating in the gorge, employs between 800 and 1,200 employees, high-paid jobs, high-tech manufacturing jobs in almost every gorge community. In situ, this Boeing subsidiary has an office or some presence in almost every gorge community. $450 million a year. That's the kind of industries that we're seeing attracted to the Columbia River Gorge National Scenic Area because of the quality of life. I offer that for perspective to say it seems to me like what we're asking for in terms of investment and planning for the future of it is worth it when you think about just the overall numbers of the industries that we are supposed to be planning for. All right, so budget issues, long-range regional planning, rapidly growing recreation demands, regional coordination, a growing backlog of development and applications. It's just really kind of a snapshot, a high-level snapshot of the things that we're facing. So what does that mean in terms of the budget needs? What we've asked the states for are 4 FTE. We have 5 now. We've asked for 4 FTE. So what are those? Well, one of those would be a planning leadership position. We had one of those. We've had one a planning leadership position historically until 2010. The former planning principal planner retired, and because of the budget situation in 2010, the commission gave up that position. We're asking to replace that. We've actually hired a person to serve in that role, but we don't have the budget or the position to actually hire a planning leader. For a regional planning agency, we think that's important. We've also asked for one resource specialist, somebody who is an expert in the areas of resource protection that we are arguably supposed to be implementing. So things like natural resources, scenic resources, cultural resources, recreation resources. We have that expertise in-house sort of on an ad hoc basis because we have to get smart on that, but we don't actually have a position that's dedicated to housing that expertise and informing the commission about how to implement or develop policies that are appropriate with dedicated expertise. We've also asked for funding for long-range planning updates. The commission identified a couple of planning priorities. One of those is for regional recreation planning. Another one is for the urban areas, some kind of vision and policy for how to give meaning to the second purpose of the act, which is to encourage development to happen inside these 13 urban areas. Right now, the commission doesn't really have a policy or even a vision for what the long-term future of gorge communities look like inside this protected landscape. We think that's important, and we've asked for some funding to continue that kind of urban planning, urban area visioning work. And then you'll see there, we've asked for 2 FTE to deal with this backlog of permits. What we know is that to implement the planning program in Klickitat County and to provide technical assistance and some level of oversight for the other 5 counties requires about 2 FTE. Depending on how you calculate the numbers, it's anywhere between 1.8 and 2.2. So we've asked for 2 full-time positions to be dedicated to current planning, development application reviews at the commission. And then last but not least is a request for funding for an administrative staff position. Right now we have 1 administrative staff position that covers everything from fiscal, budgeting, HR, payroll, commission support, executive director support. All of our administrative functions are handled by 1 individual who is frankly superhuman, has been with the commission now for 28 years next month. We need some support for her. We have in the past had 2 administrative positions. We arguably have authority to fill one, at least in Washington's budget. What we don't have is funding for that position. So we've asked for funding to help provide some additional support to the staff and commission.
Just a quick question.
Yes.
Representative.
When you're looking at like the development review specialist, I was kind of curious on the permitting side, what percentage of the workload comes from Klickitat County?
About right now, based on our last sort of reasonable estimates, when we had staff in place, we were spending a little more than 50% of our time on planning for Klickitat County. So I think we are dedicating 1.6 FTE to our overall planning program, and about 0.9 of those FTE were dedicated to Klickitat County permit reviews. Having said that, we've lost both of those 2 senior planners to career transitions in the last 8 months. So we now have 1 full-time planner, and we have 0.25 of a consultant who's experienced consultant who's helping us. More than 100% of their time is currently spent on this growing backlog in Klickitat County. I say more than 100% because we're spending way more than 40 hours a week. We're working more than 40 hours a week to try to keep up with the backlog.
Just a quick follow-up. Yeah. And And while Co-Chair Devlin talked about, you know, fee for permits and things like that, which doesn't sound like you're interested in that because of political ramifications or, you know, the potential for that, I understand. What about requiring Klickitat County, if they're not going to, you know, play by the same rules that the other five counties are doing, requiring them to fund positions for the agency if they're not going to adopt their own rules or their...
Mr. Co-Chair and Representative Rayfield, thank you for asking the question. The first good news is that Klickitat County has agreed for the first time ever to help us on a voluntary basis. We signed an agreement in February that commits, it enables Klickitat County to provide some staffing assistance to the commissions for our development application process. It's desperately needed. They've agreed to provide a skilled senior planner for one day a week. And I think Terry Cullen, our senior planner, is our principal planner, is working most closely with this individual. That relationship's really going well. We're getting some help. I think more importantly, the relationship is positive. Having said that, the commission does not have the authority to compel any of the counties to participate or not participate in the program. It really is voluntary. The counties may choose or not choose, but for any county that chooses not to directly implement the National Scenic Area Act, the commission is mandated to fill that responsibility for that county. So I think as much as folks might want to try to compel Klickitat County, that's not part of our jurisdiction, and in fact I think would be probably ill-advised. We've taken a different tact to build a positive relationship, and that seems to be working, at least with some early steps.
You know, just kind of as a general comment, I think it's tough to ask Oregonians to subsidize a Washington county for their lack of willingness to adopt that act. So
I think Mr. Co-Chair and Representative Rayfield, thank you for that observation. I want to step back for just a minute and remember that this is a cooperative agreement between the two states. I would say that if you are a landowner in Klickitat County enjoying the view, or sorry, in Wasco County, enjoying the view of Klickitat County, it's probably definitely in your interest as an Oregon citizen for the commission to make that investment in Klickitat County, just for the scenic preservation and some of the amenities. So it's, I think the two states benefit greatly from the cooperation. It's not that your dollars are being there's value for that investment on both sides of the river.
Senator Hansel, and then keeping in mind we still have public testimony today.
Okay.
And can the committee assistant see if there's any sign up at this point?
Darren, it's kind of a follow-up on what Co-Chair Rayfield said. What percentage of the CRGC budget is funded by Washington, and what percentage is funded by Oregon?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Hansel, thank you. Under the terms of the Interstate Compact, under the terms of the agreement between the states, the commission must be funded equally by Oregon and Washington.
So then, therefore, when they cut their budget, the money we may have already allocated for the commission is cut as well, because it's a 50-50 split.
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you. Follow-up. So you've indicated that, you know, you might appear in Salem on one day and in Olympia on the next. What is the process that you go through in Washington? I mean, which committee do you appear in front of, or do you appear in front of a committee?
Mr. Co-Chair, thank you much for the question. In fact, last biennium in 2013, when I had this presentation in front of this committee, it was at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I had an 8 o'clock meeting with the governor in Olympia. So in some cases, I actually have meetings on the same day, not back-to-back days. It's just a point of clarification. The process in Washington is very different from Oregon. Essentially, we don't appear in front of a committee. And to be honest, this is a refreshingly transparent and open dialogue.
I understand that. There's only a few people in the Washington legislature that control the process.
Right. Yeah, that's right. It's a very different process, and it's one of the unique challenges of trying to implement a bi-state agency with a bi-state budget.
Should let you finish your. We only have two people signed up, so we're still doing pretty well.
I'm getting close. So, I think this might be. We're getting close to the end here. So, looking ahead, why is this important? Well, this is a regional planning agency who's helping you to host a national scenic area, a place that the world wants to come and visit. If I haven't said that, I'm going to say it again. This is part of our responsibility as Oregonians. It's part of our responsibility as Washingtonians. This place, the Columbia River Gorge, has 10,000 years of stewardship history from tribal members all over the West Coast, all over the Western states. We didn't have states back then, but it's been a place that people have wanted to live, work, and play for thousands of years. It continues to be that, and I think what we're seeing is more and more interest in the gorge communities, recreation, the National Scenic Area. It's not a coincidence that the Oregonian identified the Dalles, Oregon, as the new economic model for Oregon, right? We've got Google, we've got Boeing, we've got all kinds of high-tech manufacturers, we've got value-added agriculture in ways that are really exciting. We've got a lot going on. A lot of people want to live here. But that has an impact on housing costs. It has an impact on transportation systems. It has an impact on the resources that we're trying to protect. We're not able to accomplish any of that unless we've got the resources to plan for it and to provide some kind of rational, coherent policies that balance our desire to protect the place and to support the people and communities that live there. So we will have a continued emphasis on tribal relations, on regional interstate coordination. Again, we need to find a way to help this agency be more effective. And there will be other emerging issues. You know, I think if we talked to you 3 or 4 years ago, Bakken crude transport through the Columbia Gorge would not have been on anyone's radar screen, it would not have been on most of our radar screens. It's now front and center. But that's just one issue. There will be more concerns, issues, things that this commission will be asked to deal with. And we're asking for your help to support us in our ability and capacity to deal with those issues. So with that, thank you very much, and I'll be happy to entertain questions.
Representative Clem, I have a question.
I can wait till after the public testimony and see if maybe it'll get raised there too.
Okay. Any additional questions at this time? Seeing none, thank you very much. And we only have two members of the public. Oh, we'll have to hear from the Department of Administrative Services. Mr. Miller. I didn't mean it that way. We'll have to hear. I just mean it. We have the opportunity to hear.
Thank you.
A pleasure.
Co-Chair Devlin, Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Travis Miller with the Chief Financial Office, and I'm here to present the budget for the Columbia River Gorge Commission. I'll be brief. In terms of the fiscal outlook, I do want to outline that there are some significant concerns about the Washington fiscal outlook. The McCleary decision is resulting in an estimated budget deficit of about $2.2 to $3 million, or sorry,
billion dollars.
Yes. So that's out there, and that is a challenge. Other emerging issues, we have staff capacity, both in terms of permitting backlog as well as these emerging challenges, coal and oil trains, conflict among recreational uses. There's a variety, as well as a need for kind of enhancing the ability to engage with sovereign nations. In terms of the Oregon's 10-year plan, it ties with both the healthy environment and jobs in the economy. Looking at the proposed budget, as mentioned before, it's about $1.7 million. That's an 89.2% increase over 2013-15. One of the challenges, both in analyzing this budget and making recommendations, is kind of the opacity of this budget, given that we're essentially contracting for professional services. Through my interactions with the Washington Office of Financial Management, I've been able to obtain some additional budget figures on the Washington side that give you insight into the spending patterns as well as FTE. And all the way back to 2008, essentially in 2008, we had 9.4 FTE. As mentioned, I have 5.7. The figure mentioned before was 5.25, I won't argue. But you see a consistent decline, something in the order of about 30% of a decline. Also, another important point is because of this arrangement and the fact that the employees are considered Washington employees, we're not asking for position authority. We're simply asking for the budget to fund the positions in the Washington budget. And lastly, we have the budget ask, continuation of regional priorities, about $770,000 general fund, and that's really tied to enhancing staff capacity, eliminating that permitting backlog, and adding one resource specialist who's kind of focused on emerging gorge issues, cultural scenic protection, tribal relations. That's about it. Any questions?
Yeah. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. We have two people to testify, Bob Olson and Kevin Gorman. Actually, we have three. So if both of them can come up, and then Peggy Lynch will be right after that.
Committee co-chairs, committee members, I am Bob Olson with the Friends of the Columbia Gorge today, and we are here to support the Gorge and this commission. We have a long history of involvement with the organization, and we look forward to working with you on this. Our executive director of the Friends group is here today, Kevin Gorman, and he's going to summarize our statement.
Thank you. I just, rather than talking through the statement, I just want to touch on a couple extra issues and highlight a few things. As Bob said, my name's Kevin Gorman. I'm the executive director at Friends of the Columbia Gorge. We are a nonprofit dedicated to protecting and enhancing the gorge. We have over 5,500 members in Oregon and Washington and beyond. We were formed in 1980 when there was no national scenic area. Our focus was trying to find some sort of federal protection to protect this area. And it was 6 years later with really a bipartisan support and legislation signed by Ronald Reagan that the National Scenic Area Act was created. I do want to highlight, I have a slight different interpretation of Director Nichols' comment to Senator Hansel's question about do the feds have skin in the game. The National Scenic Area Act created sort of two important roles, and one was the U.S. Forest Service would oversee the federal lands, particularly their lands, but also oversee any kind of federal operations. And then the Gorge Commission would oversee state and private. So when the management plan was created, the lands that often fall under federal, the special management area, were that management plan was created for the most part by the Forest Service. The general management area lands, those rules were created by the Gorge Commission. And there's a lot of collaboration that happens and should happen between the two entities. And when you hear about recreation and all the recreation issues, well over half of the recreation areas are managed by the Forest Service. So they're a critical player. They, like the commission, have good staff and are understaffed, and both really need to have more funding to really succeed in their job, because this is a significant challenge. I think for those of us who have known the Columbia Gorge for years and years, we may not really appreciate the national significance it has. And when Director Nichols talks about that people come from around the world, let me give you an example. A few years ago, National Geographic Traveler magazine ranked 133 places around the world as sustainable, iconic destinations. And the Columbia Gorge was ranked number 6 in the world. It was ranked ahead of every national park in the country. It was ranked ahead of the Serengeti, ahead of Tuscany. And one of the big reasons it was ranked that way was because of the framework of the National Scenic Area Act, that lands were being conserved by the Forest Service, that there were land use plans that the Gorge Commission and the Forest Service adopted, and that the communities had a level of authenticity. So the Gorge has, it's more than Portland's backyard. It's more than a place that Gorge residents live in and work in and play in. It's a place that people come from around the world to enjoy. So I think that's an important thing to understand. As you look at this budget, it's hard to look at it without looking north to Olympia. And the challenge is, what's a sweet spot you can find to help this agency grow? Olympia is faced with some real struggles here, and we do believe that the commission staff is woefully underfunded, that there are some critical issues that are happening right now and are coming down the pike, and we need to have a strong Gorge Commission. We also need to make sure somehow that the numbers match. So our organization wants to see a funding increase. We're encouraging a step increase of $200,000 to $300,000 over each biennium to get the math up to, at a minimum, the level of FTEs they've had in the past. This is critical for all the reasons that Director Nichols mentioned, but the challenge is finding something that is within the art of the possible. And I suppose that's the job of the legislature. So I think that's all I have. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Lynch.
Good morning, Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon, and I don't have a handout for you this morning. The League supports additional funding for the Gorge Commission to carry out their duties. We have been dismayed by the cuts in funding these past years, and we have been pleased that Oregon, at least, has tried to step up. And we are pleased that the governor's budget shows that kind of commitment to this important area, both as a scenic area, but as an economic, what has become an economic engine in Oregon. But we also understand the situation in the state of Washington. So along those lines, in Oregon, something that has not come up yet, and something you will hear about the next few days, is the Department of Land Conservation and Development in Oregon provides in its local government grants, or at least it has in the past, earmarked grants for those Oregon counties to help do the kinds of permitting and planning needed in the Gorge area. And I believe they actually got an additional set of dollars in the 2013 session. Even though the issue with Klickitat County is a very real one and it needs to be addressed, I want to make sure that this body understands that, at least in Oregon, we have recognized the special responsibilities that the counties in Oregon have related to planning in the Gorge, and have provided some additional funds outside of this bi-state budget area. The other thing I guess I did want to bring up, and I suspect it may have to do with Representative Clem's non-question, in his committee, House Bill 2039 was heard recently. And House Bill 2039 would create a task force, a bi-state, well, each individual state would provide this task force that will have some kind of a conversation around how we resolve the problems you have heard today. The League really believes that the Gorge Commission, and you have seen how the Gorge Commission is made up of a diverse group of people, has that responsibility, and we are concerned that creating this other entity and spending dollars on this other entity is not particularly helpful in resolving what is a very real issue about a conversation that needs to be had amongst the Gorge commissioners from Oregon and Washington and all of the other subsets that should be helping have this conversation to resolve this issue of funding of this very, very important area. And other than that, I don't have anything else to say particularly except go forth, do good works, do the best you can in negotiations with the state of Washington. We do understand their issues. We do have a league in Washington as well. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
You bet.
Mr. Nichols, could you come forward again? Can you provide a letter to the committee and the co-chairs of this committee and the co-chairs of the full committee what you would do if you had an additional appropriation beyond current service level of $250,000 and $500,000? Just to see what your priorities would be under that. No promises really indicated here. And obviously, even if we came in and decided that we could do the $250,000, if Washington wouldn't match it, you'd be exactly in the same position you are now.
Mr. Co-Chair, thank you very much for the invitation. And we'd be happy to provide a letter. I wanted to clarify a couple of things. And this may show up in the letter, so I'll just address that now. Reserve the contents of the letter to the commission and its priorities. But Ms. Lynch just mentioned that House Bill 2039 would have created a task force to take a look at some of the challenges that I've outlined. I want to thank her for her support because this is a difficult challenge and we're all trying to find a way to work on this. Having said that, there are a number of things that the Gorge Commission simply cannot do that need legislative involvement to help clarify and improve the function of the bi-state agreement. The commission cannot force state agencies to cooperate with one another. The commission has a very limited ability to do that. The commission can't command a budget, for instance. That really has to be a bi-state cooperative effort at both legislative levels and between the governor's offices. I've invited our council to come up and sit with me. We've developed, I think, a 40-page list of items that really require state leadership, bi-state leadership, that are outside the commission's ability to influence, that, which is the reason why we've asked for a task force, or the reason why the task force is being asked for, I believe. So I just wanted to clarify that point. That may be, again, the commission will have this discussion and get back to you. That may be one of the areas that we ask for financial help, is to help bring the two states back together and help us work through some of these challenges. But having said that, thank you for the invitation. I'd be glad to do it.
Any additional questions? Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One question I have is there any historical look at other funding mechanisms, or maybe this is the kind of thing we'd look at going forward if we brought the states back together, such as tourism-related taxes in the boundaries of the scenic area?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Clem, yes. There are a lot of examples around the nation and really internationally where popular recreation destinations have implemented different kinds of funding mechanisms. That honestly was part of the reason why we asked the two universities to put together this series of reports. It kind of helps to start that conversation, begins to lay a little bit of foundation that we had hoped the states would pick up and help us work through to find something that works for all of us and meets the needs of the place.
So in the past, there may not have been, but that's something for the future.
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you. Follow up.
Do we know, is that something in these other areas that's an authority that can be bestowed by the federal government, or is it something like the two states would have to do it in a compact, or are we not even that far along to know what form that might take?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Clem, I'm going to try to answer this, and then my attorney is going to stop me if I get it wrong. I started by talking about the unique nature of this three-way agreement. The two states have entered into an agreement, and then under the provisions of the Constitution, the federal government has to provide consent for the interstate compact
to be effective. We have the National Scenic Area Act that lays out some high-level purposes and kind of the broad parameters for the National Scenic Area. But the Interstate Compact, the agreement between the states, can be flexibly tailored to fit within those federal confines. But as long as the states can come up with an agreement that accomplishes the purposes or is consistent with the federal act, I think the states have an opportunity to do quite a bit within that. In other words, it would not necessarily require additional federal action.
It just seems like that was a very appropriate way to look at, with all the visits and all the increasing interest, having some way to, you know, because you're certainly not going to be charging tolls at the start of the highway. So, but in other communities, and Representative Gomberg's communities, you know, you'll have a hotel motel tax that some piece of it goes to help keep the tourism industry alive. And it seems like that's the kind of thing that, you know, while you'd have to work it through with the chambers of commerce and all your different community, but it seems appropriate that to find a mechanism that would make you thriving and healthy, where there's some nexus to what's causing your financial woes, which is over-loving. And so you get the people who over-love to chip in a few cents on every meal, and you know, you're probably talking millions of dollars in revenue versus coming to beg both legislatures to simultaneously come up with a couple hundred grand.
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Clem, just an anecdote from Hood River County recently. The Hood River County Sheriff, Matt English, has been talking about it, the inability of his sheriff's office to provide on-water emergency response to kiteboarders, windsurfers, stand-up paddleboards, kayakers, jet skiers, powerboaters, water skiers. I mean, there's no end of people who want to spend time on the Columbia River. In Hood River County alone, they estimate that every weekend day, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, there are between 1,000 and 1,500 boards recreating on the water in Hood River County alone, with no sheriff's response, no emergency medical response. Now, this is a conversation that I started with our colleagues at the Oregon State Marine Board, and we talked a little bit about how we might be able to start to provide some kind of rational policy response or some kind of funding mechanism on the boards. Scott Bruin and I had a great visit over coffee, but very quickly realized that unless his counterparts in Washington weren't also participating, it would be just as easy for folks to drive across the river, launch their board in Washington, and not be subject to the tax or fee. So I think it just highlights in part the size of the issues that we're dealing with, but also the absolute necessity for the states to be cooperating together.
Okay. Anything additional? Senator Hansel.
Just real quick, is Corbett in the National Scenic Area?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Hansel, yes, it is.
Why isn't it listed as a town on the map?
Corbett is not identified as one of the urban areas. There are 13 congressionally identified urban areas inside the National Scenic Area. Beyond that, Senator Hansel, I really don't know why it's not identified.
So Wishram is and Corbett is not? Okay.
Anything additional? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That concludes our hearing for today.
Map envy over there.